We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkins Show.
670 The Score in Chicago. Shout out to you guys, McNeil and Parkins. Love you guys.
Afternoons on The Score.
How the hell are you down on the opponent's 8-yard line and you don't try to get into the end zone? Jeez. Are you nuts?
I don't give a damn if they call a quarterback sneak, a draw, or punt the football through the end zone, or start a fight, or take their clothes off, join the band, pick up a trombone.
Take their clothes off?
Yeah, I don't give a damn. I really don't. If you're going to make those kind of calls, then you live with it. I don't have to live with it.
I'm just trying to point out.
I know that.
My God.
You're being a purist. You got to talk about the game.
You got to be kidding me. Guys, our defense gave up 459
Thank
yards
you.
Of offense. That is a fact, Doug.
I don't think that. It's also a fact,
Doug,
that they got five takeaways.
I don't give a damn.
You should give a damn because that's the difference
in
the football game.
I do.
Game.
That's what I'm pointing out. 459 yards.
You can't
Who the hell
do
you
me.
Think gave that up?
Let me ask,
the Green
you
Bay
think
Packers
they stumped
right here?
Them because they gave up 459 yards? Nick, without being a...
Excuse me. You didn't mean to say Nick, right?
Yeah.
Run the football. We're
right.
Going to have to run. How many times
you do what
I
you have to do?
You?
Then you have to do what you have to
you
do.
Take advantage of what the opponents give you. I understand
right.
that. But sooner or later, we're going to have to run the football. Do you not agree or do you disagree?
I agree, but the fact is,
well,
when
then
do
shut
you
shut up.
Do it? No, you shut up.
And by the way, Doug, John Renzi, who's the president of York Furriers, he would like to make you a pair of earmuffs, either mink or fox. In orange, York Furriers would like to do that. John would like to do that.
Well, I prefer beaver.
I told him.
I want beaver.
You want beaver, I'll tell John.
The McNeil and Parkins Show. Afternoons on The Score.
Oh, God, I could just see thousands and thousands of Score fans throughout Chicagoland smiling ear to ear as they listen to that. This hour on The Score brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com.
For so many years, that was the treat Bears fans got post-game style right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, and it's our pleasure to bring in one half of frickin' Frack. He played for the Bears for 10 years, a world champion in 1963. Our pal Ed Obradovich is joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. And as I listened to those highlights, OB, it occurred to me, man, it's shocking. Doug didn't die of a heart attack 15 years ago, for crying out loud, as upset as he got in some of those shows.
Wow. I'll tell you what. Everything, all those years we were on, every damn thing you heard, nothing was rehearsed. We didn't run through anything. Everything you heard was fresh, bang, right out of both of our mouths. And sometimes we agreed. Most of the time we disagreed. But I'll tell you what, Doug played, 14, 15 years? I played 11. We won a world championship. You know, I think we know a little bit about football. And sometimes Dan and in our shows, it kind of reminded me of like a cluster bomb going off. But it was all real. It was all real, believe me.
Yes, there wasn't a pretentious bone in Doug's body. And what I think is often easy for guys who didn't know him as a player like me. I mean, you did, and I want you to talk to him. We have this memory of Doug being this gigantic teddy bear, and he was. But like you said, 14 years in the league, he was a mean SOB to survive that long. What was it that made him tick as an athlete to enable him to enjoy the success he did for as long as he did, OB?
Well, one of the things, Danny, that I measure a football team and, more important, a football player by, can they play, do they play when they're hurt? Or do they take some days off, some weeks off? But you got to answer the bell every week. There's only 16 weeks. And Doug answered it year after year after year. There were times when Doug was hurt so bad, he could hardly walk. Mm-hmm. But he'd take the shots, and he'd go out there and play and give it everything he had. And I'll tell you what, another thing about Doug, he could stop the run. He could defend the pass. He could hit the flat. He could catch a back out in the flat. He was one hell of a football player. And I'm as serious as I can be. He was a hell of a football player. And you want to know what? He was a better guy. He was a better man. I'll tell you what, his wife Dana and the kids and his entire family, his parents, his brothers, just wonderful, wonderful people. He just left us too soon, way, way too soon.
OB, was he underrated and underappreciated as a player simply because the Bears didn't win enough when he was there?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Are you going to – Dan, that's one of the big problems. You know, a few guys may get a call, but I'll tell you what, when you're, you know, 3-13, you know, 5-whatever or whatever, year after year after year after year, coaches getting fired, one thing after another, they don't look at you. You know, they start looking at when you're like 8-8, you know, 7-9, somewhere in there. That's when they start looking at people, trying to give them, you know, all the blessings and all the stuff and the honors that you can give them. But when you're on the bottom part for all those years that Doug played, you're not going to get the call. Very few get the call. But I can tell you this. He can play with anybody. Mm. At strong linebacker, weak linebacker, or middle linebacker. He did not have to take a seat to anybody. It's not that we were together all these years and we had a great relationship. It was, you know, good times, bad times, but it was real. Mm-hmm. And when I'm telling you about Doug as a football player, he didn't take a back seat to anybody. He'd take people head on. You could see it in the films. You know, he was there in practice. The guy gave everything he could. And I'll tell you what, it was just I think today, Danny, when you called yesterday, you know, thinking about Dougie, and I talked to Mitch today. Wow. You know, 5 years. 5 years. He should be here. I know he's in a better place, but you want to know what? I still want him here. Still want him here.
Yeah, I could tell when we talked how much you miss him, Ed. You guys were not just business partners. You were very, very good friends for a very long period of time. And as I mentioned to you, and I said the same thing last week on the anniversary of Kopic's death, that, you know, I don't know how many times I reach for the phone and want to call Doug or Chet and realize, man, not anymore, and it hurts. I'm sure very few times you go out in public, when we can go out in public, and people don't say to you how magical they thought your post-game shows were with Doug. How would you describe how that all came to be, and also how that makes you feel when so many Bears fans hold that show, you and Doug, in such a high regard?
Well, you know, that goes back to the days, Danny. What was it, on Addison or Belmont?
Yeah.
We had the studio there?
Yep.
And Ron Gleason talked to me, and he talked to Doug, and he says, I think you two guys should be put together and you do a good job. And that's how it started with Ron Gleason. And then Doug is very headstrong, and so am I. And so it's that right off from the get-go, Danny. Right off from the damn get-go, I mean, we absolutely – he would say what he wanted, and if I disagreed, I'd let him have it. And if he disagreed with me, he'd let me have it, and he'd say why. And I think what the people enjoyed is that you had two guys that played a lot of years of football.
win, lose, or draw. And there's a lot of knowledge in that studio. And, you know, when I started playing in the '60s, a career lasted, the average was 2 years. Decade of the 1960s, by all the football pundits, was the most violent decade of football. And Doug and I used to go back and forth, and we would say, why? There was one rule, and the one rule was there was no rules. But what you did, you played clean, you hit as hard as you could. But that was how long a career lasted when I played. 2 years.
Yeah.
Not a smart move on my part.
We're talking to Ed Obradovich on the fifth anniversary of Doug Buffone's passing. Do you have a favorite memory of any of those times on the air with you and Doug, whether it was an agreement, a disagreement, a rant, Jay Cutler did something that pissed him off? Like, do you have one that you go back to that maybe stands out above the rest?
Well, there were so many of them, but the one thing Danny, I could tell you is, I think you guys still have to have that on tape there. And Doug, all of a sudden, we're talking, you know, after a game, talking football, and then Doug starts with how great he was as a baseball player at Louisville. And I looked at him, I said, what? And then he was telling me that he was a pitcher and he was this. And somehow it just hit me, and I just bust out laughing. And I think we went on the air for, I don't know, close to 15 minutes. I couldn't say a word. I couldn't stop laughing. We'd go to a commercial, and then we'd come back, and I would say just before I go, okay, Doug, we got to get this straight now. We're screwing up here big time. And he'd open his mouth, and I'd bust out laughing. And what it was, he's talking about what a great baseball player he was at Louisville. You know. And I told him, oh, are you kind of like Babe Ruth, something like that? You know, but it went on and on. But it's hard to explain. It's been some years. But that was, as far as I'm concerned, the funniest thing. But, Danny, I can tell you this. Every week when we went on the air, you never knew how the hell it was going to go. You know, you're going to be dead serious or you start laughing or what. I don't know. But the one big thing, again, rambling on here, is that it was about Doug, how great a baseball player he thought he was at Louisville. Oh, my God.
What did you admire the most about Doug Buffone?
Playing hurt.
What a football answer.
Okay, yeah, I know. It was a football playing answer.
Hurt and not only playing hurt, but playing at a level of championship kind of football. And I'm dead serious when I tell you this. Doug would take a lot of shots, as most all of us did when we played. You had to, or you were gone. And that was Doug. Danny, I'm telling you, he didn't want to miss a play a minute. Mm-hmm. And I remember blood coming out of his nose, his cheeks, the helmet came down, busted across his nose, blood coming out, his hands all bloody. And that was basically week after week. He was a warrior. I'm telling you guys, he was a warrior. You know, you wish every team today had 53 warriors like Doug Buffone. If you did, the monsters of the Midway would be back, and we'd be world champions.
You know, OB, I refreshed myself this morning knowing you were coming on your 63 championship game win over the Giants. You guys took the ball away from Y.A. Tittle and the Giants six times and eked out two touchdowns, two quarterback sneaks from Bill Wade. And it occurred to me the more things change, the more they stay the same. This organization continues the need to win by taking it away a bunch. You had one of five picks off Y.A. Tittle, mister.
Well, now that you brought that up, Dan. the pass, I tell you what. It's something you can hang your hat on, you know. That interception I made led to the winning touchdown in the world championship game, and the Monsters of Midway were back, and we were the world champs again. And we beat the New York Giants, and that was Hollywood, Frank Gifford, and Y.A. Tittle, quarterback, and all those guys. And they came in town, and everybody thought the Giants were going to really give us a whooping. And they went home bloodied and losers. Too bad.
And you guys got all of $5,900. That's what the winner's checks were. $5,900 a man. The Giants got
rounding it off, I think it was 58 something. Oh, my God.
Wow. Wow.
What do you think about the Bears this year, OB?
Well, you know, time is running out. Time's running out on everybody. Time is running out on winning the Super Bowl. You've got a defense still to this day. They don't have to be the best in the league, but they're good enough that you can win a Super Bowl. And it's amazing to me that you go back through the years, what has been the problem of the offense, no matter who the coach or coaches are, offensive coordinator, head coach, the GMs are, it's the same damn thing. Okay? We get down in the red zone, and what with John Fox? John Fox never tried scoring touchdowns. Remember, he settled for a field goal? We bring this kid in, Nagy. What does he do? We get down into the red zone. We don't score for touchdowns. Our quarterback had yards per play on last season, dead last. 32nd in the league. Mitch Trubisky, 32nd in the league. An average game per play. Excuse me, average game per play. We were dead last. And now we're going into this year with a defense, again, that is there that we can win. All arrows, needles, figures, everything has to be pointing to the offense. You've got to be able to convert on third downs, move the ball down the field, and get into the end zone. We don't do that. We just don't. And I'd like to see somebody who knows anything about football tell me I'm wrong.
Well, you know, it's also not just the quarterback. It's a violation of Doug Buffon's three keys, which always began with run the ball.
Oh, did he and I go at it one time. All of a sudden, Dan, it just pops into my mind about all those years together and we're doing it. And all of a sudden, when all the rules changed, you know, and made it a passing game. You know, you can't touch a quarterback. You can't touch a receiver. So it's open up the passing game. So we open up. Doug says, yeah, that's what you have to do to win the NFL today. You got to pass. And I leaped all over. I almost jumped over the desk at him.
I remember when he told me how he wished the forward pass would be made illegal. And I also remember him right around playoff time being mad at Jesus for being born right before the NFL playoffs. Christmas got in the way of the rhythm of his NFL season. That's one of my favorite pregame stories.
Let me tell you one of the reasons why Doug would rather have a run game, okay? Because there are times it all depends on if they were an ace backfield or a deuce backfield, whether it was weak or strong side. He'd either have to take the first back coming out or the second back. And the last time I checked, running backs are pretty fast, okay? And you put them in motion, and they come at you, and you're a linebacker. You're running backwards while they're running forwards. So Doug didn't like pass coverage too much.
OB, our audience is absolutely loving this. Thank you very much for the stories on what I'm sure is a tough day, 5-year anniversary of Doug's passing. Thank you. Thank you very much. We enjoyed it.
You're loved, OB. You know that, right? You are loved by Bears fans and by a lot of people at our radio station.
Well, I can tell you this, guys. Right back at you. Right back at you. Thanks for getting me on and saying a few words about Doug and to Dana today and his kids. And, Doug, if you're listening up there, and I know you are, stay strong, my friend. Everybody stay strong.
Thanks, OB. Take care, buddy. Ed Obradovich, number 87, Proviso East, the University of Illinois, and 11 years in a Bears uniform. But I just that stuff afterward, though, with Doug, after his career, probably for in the eyes of most Bears fans, that's Ed Obradovich, is a post-game show host, along with Doug Buffone, and they did it unlike any tandem before them and probably unlike anybody who will ever do it after them.
God, what a great answer to your question of what he respected most about Doug. You're looking for something as a man,
I know, as a person. I know.
You've known him for decades. What is the thing you respect about him the most? Always played hurt.
Played hurt. You're a laugh right now.
So good.
Yep.
That is okay. So
it's a way
damn.
To tug at the heartstrings.
It's perfect. It is the perfect answer to a perfect question. Rusty LaRue was a rookie during the Last Dance, the 97-98 season. We'll get his thoughts on the documentary and what the hell that must have been like. I couldn't help myself about thinking about the present-day Bulls a few times during the doc last night. We will hear that. And, yes, don't worry, texters. You're going to hear plenty of Doug audio as we go. I'm sure actually right now before we go to break from the great Chris Tannehill.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We end up winning the series, but it was an incredible, incredible playoff performance. I've never seen it before, and I had never seen it after. That wasn't Michael Jordan out there. It was God disguised as Michael Jordan.
An all-time quote about Michael Jordan from Larry Bird that was featured prominently in The Last Dance last night. Bottom of the hour on The Score, brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including postal workers, CTA staff, and airport staff. We appreciate you. Mac, we talked about this a little bit when Arturis came in and Pax got put aside and Gar got fired, and that how would we feel about the present day Bulls through the prism of this documentary for the glory years? And I honestly thought that I wasn't going to think about it a lot because I was just going to be all up in my feelings of nostalgia, you know, watching my childhood through the eyes of an adult. But I saw myself thinking a lot about the present day Bulls when Pax was featured. From that moment, specifically, by the way, because today is the anniversary of Jordan dropping 63 in the Garden, and obviously everyone remembers Pax's shot in the finals, but the documentary made it like, because Michael was on a minutes restriction and Pax hit a buzzer beater against Indiana,
yep.
They go to the playoffs because of that, and so if Pax doesn't hit that shot with Jordan on the bench, we never get Jordan dropping 63 against the Celtics and that iconic quote from Larry Bird. Like, obviously not as big because it's a 30-win team as his shot to win an NBA championship, but that's a top-five Jordan moment, top-five Jordan game, the 63 in the Garden. It
yeah.
never happens if Pax doesn't hit a shot against the Pacers.
And I had forgotten that completely as well. That's right. And amazing how much younger they both looked in 1986. I found myself a couple of times thinking about the current Bulls. And one of the things that makes me occur that occurred to me was when Jerry Reinsdorf was talking about hiring Jerry Krause, and knowing Krause, a White Sox scout at the time, had some personality quirks, and most people told him, no, you don't want this guy fronting your basketball team. His comment was, I didn't care if he won a popularity contest. That's a dated philosophy. That's 35 years ago.
Yeah.
You better care these days about whether your general manager's personality is going to be that for a franchise now in its existence that has not succeeded in terms of wooing a championship caliber free agent acquisition. They haven't done that. And you better not have that attitude. And I don't think they do. I think recent changes indicate there has been progress, but that's something that never can be said today. I don't care if my GM wins a personality contest. Well, he better be more of a people person than Jerry got away with in the mid-80s.
Yeah, no question. And also reports over the weekend of the Bulls reaching out to Michael Finley, and our conversation with Mark Cuban kind of tipped the hand to that as a guy who has a great reputation among players in the NBA and Chicago ties as well for maybe being the general manager under Arturas Karnišovas. But how about also history repeating itself and PAX having a front row seat for that dynamic between player, coach, and front office, and then when he's in charge over the last 18, you know, years thereabout, or 17 years.
17, yeah.
Yeah, you know, in the documentary, it had to be broken up because Krause was jealous of the attention and credit that Phil was getting. We know that PAX and Tibbs had huge conflict over that team being described as being like in Tibbs's identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was Noah and Butler and Taj and the try hard defense Bulls and their hard ass coach, and he has to undermine Tibbs, and he gets his assistant Ron Adams out of there, and he puts his spies onto the coaching staff, and Tibbs doesn't trust the front office because PAX and him had the conflict, and then also the minutes restriction for Jordan and how much of a conflict that created. They have the minutes restriction on Joakim Noah, which is what leads to PAX pulling the tie and going nuts on Vinny Del Negro.
Yes, he did. That was the tie tug incident. That's right.
Dan Hallbeck
told anything more than 14 minutes and you're fired. So with 14 seconds left in the game, job preservation. Hopefully John Paxson can win this game, because I don't want to lose. I don't want to take a shot at this being a threat that they'll back themselves up and actually pull the plug on it. So he sat him and Paxson hit the shot.
But it's wild, right? Like he sees it from the player perspective.
Yeah.
Conceivably, he is siding with the players and coaches as a player, and then he becomes an executive and is on the executive side of the exact same things. Now, in the case of Noah, his coach disobeyed the minutes restriction order, but you would think he would know as a player how frustrating it could be and the arbitrary nature of it, right? Like, there's no science behind 7 minutes a half for Jordan or 24. Like, it was just so ridiculous, all of it.
14 like, more seconds are going to break your ass.
Right. Like, it was why blaming Tibbs for the Rose injuries was ridiculous. The Bulls were the most injured team in the league last year. Tibbs is long since gone. Like, it was crazy to me to watch it and be like, okay, the game has completely changed, right? It is an unrecognizable sport. Jordan dropped 63 in a playoff game against the Celtics and did not attempt a three-pointer. Like, that is impossible.
Yeah, it really is.
But then the more things change, the more they stay the exact same. Management undercutting coaches, minutes restrictions, player v front office distrust. It was obviously the story of the 2017-19 Bulls would not be nearly as compelling for a documentary. You could like make a 30-for-30 short for 7 minutes that would be downloaded by like 14 people. But a lot of the stories were the exact same with just much less interesting characters over the last few years. It was completely wild to me to see it.
Yeah, me more than you, I think, early on when we started the show, I had some pushback from some listeners who texted regarding a defense of Krause and Reinsdorf mounted by me primarily. Look, I don't condone what Reinsdorf did. I think he made the wrong decision. If that thing's going to be blown up, Jerry Krause should have been shown the door. I would have chosen coach greatest players of all time and one of the greatest coaches of all time, too, over general manager to keep it going one more run. But that doesn't excuse the behavior exhibited by the Bulls, and I never will find that to be an acceptable behavior to berate and dehumanize the way Pippen is described to have done, and I'll be eager to see how much Rusty LaRue wants to give up on that, if he'll paint a more vivid picture than Wennington and others, including Phil Jackson, were willing to paint. And somebody texted they haven't gotten into, and the texter said he doubts they will, some of the personnel decisions that Jordan pushed that would have been terrible ideas, because in Jordan's hatred for Krause, he wanted his job. Jordan wanted to be not only the greatest player in the league's history and Mr. Chicago Bull, he wanted to run the Bulls. And he was convinced forever they'd never win an NBA championship if Walter Davis weren't going to be a part of it. And it turned out they never got Walter Davis, and they didn't miss Walter Davis. And he, even last night in the first episode, is reluctant to give Krause credit for winning in the Charles Oakley-Bill Cartwright trade. Did you notice that? He's a reluctant yes that was a good trade for the Bulls because he liked Oakley so much. Oakley was his personal protector, and he was attached to him, and it took him a long time to warm up to that, like a fairly recent interview with Jordan about this thing. He's saying, yeah, that was better that we had Bill Cartwright. But at the time, he didn't want to acknowledge it because anything Jerry did was the wrong thing in Michael's eyes.
It's wild that Jerry Krause is the architect of the greatest dynasty in Chicago sports history and has a negative approval rating simply because of how it ended. He had way more good moves than bad. He just is remembered for being the linchpin of what caused it to break up, even if the story is more complicated than that. And, oh yeah, by the way, he's not the one who got Michael Jordan here. So it's like those right. two things, I think, is what people use as the yeah, but for Krause. But trading our friend Will Perdue for Dennis Rodman, that worked out. Getting Tony Kukoc, that worked out. Mm-hmm. Moving up for Scottie Pippen, that worked out. Oakley for Cartwright, that worked out. Horace Grant, B.J. Armstrong. Like, the guy built the dynasty outside of Michael Jordan.
Yes, there were different pieces on both three-peats. Most of them were Krause moves. You had your shooting specialist from the first three-peat in Paxson, and then you had Steve Kerr the second time they went through it in a very, very similar role. So, I was more into it than I was expecting to be into it, and look forward to next week. We going to get another double scoop next week? Do we get 3 and 4 next week, or just one episode?
No, it's the next 4 week. Sundays, 2 episodes back-to-back per Sunday.
Oh, that's nice. That's a 2-hour sports commitment every Sunday night. What do you think of that?
I think it's awesome. It felt like a live event. I was like, I can't watch this on DVR. I have to put up with the commercials. Like, I have to be live and be taking this in with the rest of Chicago. And I actually, earlier today, someone got a hold of a digital copy of episodes 1 through 8 and offered to send them to me. And I was like, No, I don't want it. Like, I don't want to be tempted to binge it. I want to watch it as if it's a live sporting event. And you know, for me, man, like, that's not how I watch basically anything other than sports these days. I will record, right, fast forward, on demand, like, watch it at my leisure. But no, like, the next 4 Sundays, a big event would have to happen for me to not be watching those things live.
Yeah, while I didn't mind the refresher course on Michael Jordan in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, I didn't find it to be completely necessary. I thought that could have found its way on the cutting room floor. This is the Last Dance. This is about the Bulls. I didn't need as much as they gave me on that.
Yeah, you know, I think just from reading some of the stuff with the director, that's going to be the thematic element throughout the whole documentary, right? So, like, last night you had the Scottie Pippen episode, right? You had the intro to why it was the Last Dance, and then you had the Scottie Pippen episode. You're going to have a Rodman episode. You're going to have a Bad Boys Pistons episode, which is coming up next week. Mm-hmm. And so I think as they move through, that's why they kept showing that timeline and jumping back and forth. So I think that's just one of the vehicles that they're using to tell the story is that, so, okay, we're talking about the Bad Boys, so now we have to jump back to the late 80s, and then how did that impact how the Bulls were playing in the late 90s when teams were coming at them and that sort of thing. So I assume that will be a connective thread throughout the entire thing, jumping back and forth through timelines all the time. But I'm with you. Like, we knew a lot of that already, but the Pippen stuff I thought needed to be in there, right? Like, going back to two members of his family, poverty, Arkansas, two members of his family in a wheelchair, big family, poverty, supporting all of them as an explanation
Billy
for why.
Suffering a stroke and him needing money. Yeah, the little burg of Hamburg, Arkansas, population 3,500. He came from nothing, and I love what his dad said. We didn't know we were poor.
Yeah, it's a great.
They didn't know
great.
They were poor till Scotty had money. That's when if you can get through life and that's how you feel about it, then something's going right. You're doing something right if you're living at a poverty level and you don't feel poor and you didn't know you were poor.
Rusty LaRue is going to join us at 5:00. He was a rookie on the 97-98 team, but I want to do this on these Mondays after the Last Dance. We'll do it at different times each Monday. Our audio overlord, Chris Tannehill, has put together and had put together a remembrance, a retrospective of the entire run of the 90s Bulls dynasty. We're going to play it for you coming up. That'll get you in your feels and get you ready for the Last Dance. So you'll hear that coming up, and then Rusty LaRue at 5 on the Score.
Every single game, there was never a day off. He knew that there was going to be somebody in that crowd that never saw him play before. That's what kept him going. It wasn't like, oh, hey, I went to see this guy play and he only got 12 points. It didn't happen.
When I think of Michael Jordan, yes, I think of the shot. But I think of 3 years of watching that youngster get better and better and better. Michael Jordan's the only player that could ever turn it on and off. And he never freaking turned it off.
Roy Williams at the end from The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2. Over 6 million people for the national ratings for it on ESPN, the most watched documentary ever for them. Obviously the one of most acclaim, OJ Made in America. But the other highest, the previous high, Mac, for a debut was the Bo Jackson one. I think they called it Bo Knows. And it was just over 3 million people that watched that. So twice the audience for the premiere of the Michael Jordan Last Dance. We've got Rusty LaRue, which I'm just excited about because that's a fun thing to say. Like, I can't imagine he's going to be featured very much in this doc, but what would it be like to be a rookie on that 97-98 team that's going through its last dance? He will tell stories about that season coming up at 5:00. But Tanny has done his audio magic on the Bulls 90s era and the dynasty. We are going to play this at different times on Monday to get you in the feels. So here it is, the Bulls of the 90s through the ears and audio masterwork of Chris Tannehill.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Game 7 from the Palace, the Chicago Bulls and the defending world champions, Detroit Pistons.
I thought it would be a cakewalk of a game. They just weren't strong enough mentally to compete at the level that we were competing at.
The Detroit Pistons will meet the Portland Trailblazers in the best of 7.
1990-91, our whole focus was on Detroit. No one else made a difference.
Pistons wasting no time and getting out of here. The Pistons just left. The Detroit Pistons heading back to the locker room. The Chicago Bulls advance to the NBA championship round. Let's go to Ahmad.
All right, Michael. It had to be a bit of sweet revenge winning here.
I think for the city of Chicago and for the organization, this is a big step for us. Right now, we're looking forward to the finals and trying to do our best.
For the Chicago Bulls, this is their first ever appearance in the finals, and this their silver anniversary season. Jordan.
Tongue is out. Something bad about to happen to the Lakers.
And the Chicago Bulls have won their first ever NBA championship.
When I first came here, we started from the bottom, and we had to work our way up to the top.
Right now, to this day, we are on top.
For the Bulls, there are great expectations. This team has its championship. Now, it seeks its place in history.
There's Jordan for three! Yes! Did you see that look? Michael indicating he can't believe it.
Chicago fans looking to tonight as a coronation of the champion Bulls.
To say a special thanks to the organization, to the city of Chicago. Thank God you drafted me instead of Portland.
The Suns by two. It has come down to this possession.
Axe waving for BJ to come back, and Michael flips it in to BJ. Back to Michael. Michael, 11 seconds. Across the timeline, he comes, goes to Pippen. Pippen runs down the lane, dumps it out to Horace. Paxton for three. Yeah!
Hits the three. 3:09:10 left. And the Bulls lead 99-98.
Chicago Bulls have three straight NBA championships.
The word retire means you can do anything you want from this day on. So if I desire to come back and play again, maybe that's what I want to do. Maybe that's the challenge that I may need someday down the road.
Michael Jordan today comes back not just to play, but again, aiming to be the best.
For Michael Jordan, the tears are flowing. I would think there is a tie-in with his late dad on this Father's Day, 1996.
A lot of people have been asking me about the shot. Phil told Michael, he said, Michael, I want you to take the last shot. And Michael said, you know, Phil, I don't feel real comfortable in these situations. So maybe we ought to go in another direction.
Michael, in traffic, to Curl, 15 footers.
Jordan woke up with flu-like symptoms. He had a stomach ache and a headache, and he couldn't go back to sleep. He threw up all night.
The game tied. Here's Jordan. Yes. Michael Jordan from straight away. Looks like he's a boxer just hanging on along the ropes.
Total exhaustion.
17 seconds from game 7 or from championship number 6.
Jordan, 20-footer ahead of the key. Good. Chicago by 1. And the Utah Jazz take time.
Michael Jordan running on fumes with 45 points.
The Chicago Bulls have won their 6th NBA championship.
And it's their 2nd three-peat. Jackson and Jordan, perhaps for the last time.
There was a certain excitement about the team. There was a certain, like, rock star mentality about the team.
The Bulls of the 90s were, without question, one of the best teams in the history of the NBA.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.